Yes, good morning. Welcome to the morning show this Tuesday, April the 2nd. And we're live from the Beach House in Greystones for a very special show to mark World Autism Day today, which takes place all over the world. Now, the show today is in collaboration with autism charity As I Am, which is celebrating 10 years of service. And we'll be finding out later on all about the work they do and how we can help by joining their Same Chance Walk on Sunday, April the 7th. We'll also be speaking to various guests who have had either their own personal experiences with autism or who work with adults and children with autism. We'll be discussing often visible barriers that autistic people face in their communities, discover the supports available and the actions we can take to give the same chance to the at least 1 in 27 people in Ireland who are autistic. And you can visit asiam.ie for more information. Our first guest this morning is the CEO of As I Am, Adam Harris. Hi, Adam.
Good morning, Declan. Thanks so much for doing the show.
Thanks for coming in. And I know the head office is based in Black Rock. However, the origins of all this started in Greystones.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a proud Greystones native. We set up the charity here 10 years ago, around the time that I was doing my leaving cert. And I suppose I set up As I Am based on my own experiences growing up as an autistic person. So very much, I suppose, the roots of the organisation in every sense are in County Wicklow. And that's why we're so delighted to be having our Same Chance Walk, which is really an opportunity to celebrate the organisation and the work we do on Sunday in Belmont Domain in Greystones.
And describe, you know, your origins. How did you know, first of all, you were autistic?
Well, I suppose the amazing thing is, because we poll attitudes to autism, and now we live in a society where almost everybody is aware of autism. I think something like 80% of the public have heard of the condition. A majority of us know somebody who's autistic, and actually a very significant minority of us say we've someone in our family who is autistic. However, the reality was that wasn't the case 20, 25 years ago. You know, my mom from the word go would have seen there was something quite different about me. I wasn't able to crawl when I should have been able to walk. I had lots and lots of speech at a young age. So by my first birthday, I could say, "Santa, bring me car." But I understood words exactly as they were written down or exactly as they were spoken. And if you understand language in that way, Ireland isn't a great country to grow up in, because very often whatever we mean, we say the opposite. There was a long list of places as a family we couldn't go, you know, family occasions, restaurants, cafes, because smells of food, crowds of people would be very overwhelming and distressing for me. So as a result, as a young child, you're having these different experiences, but you don't have the language to explain it. Your family don't understand autism yet. So it's a very overwhelming time. And I spent a lot of my time as a young child very overwhelmed and very frustrated. When I received my autism diagnosis, the assumption at the time would have been to go to special education. So I spent the first 3 years of my education in a special school away from this community, traveling long distances every day to go to school. Thankfully, the system began to change. And when I was 8 years old, I moved to a national school here in Greystone, St. Patrick's, with the support of an amazing SNA, Jennifer, for 5 years. And ultimately, I was able to go to St. David's and Greystones independently. But I suppose growing up, one of the things that frustrated me was, even though we always talked openly about autism as a family, so mom would say things like, you know, the way you don't like busy places, but you know all the flags of the world, and that's called autism. I suppose by the time I was a teenager or a preteen, I hated people knowing that I was autistic, because you'd notice people behaving very differently around you, people uncomfortable, people wanting to do the right thing but not knowing what it was. So you'd observe people talking that little bit louder to you or talking that little bit slower to you. So I began to blog about my experiences when I was around 16 or 17, and I wrote a piece that said that if in Ireland, if people know you're autistic, they speak to you like you're ET. And that kind of blew up online. And from there, I suppose, As I Am was born, because at the time, there was a lot of discussion about autism, but we didn't hear much from autistic people. And I think that's been the history of much of the autism movement. We've talked about autistic people. We've done things to autistic people instead of actually realizing that autism is a different way of thinking and it's society that needs to change, not the person. So as I began to travel around and share my experiences, it was clear we needed to have a different conversation. And that's how As I Am was born.
And the diagnosis process, how was that? I mean, do you... I won't even begin to second guess, but yeah. You go into a process and then at the end of it, is it decided that you were autistic?
So one of the most important things to say, I think, on the day that's in it, is the barriers to get an assessment are absolutely huge. So actually this year in our Same Chance report, which we published this morning, over half of the people represented, and that's 1,700 people, had to access their diagnosis privately. So the first battle for families, if they have this question, is actually getting an appointment somewhere and often incurring a huge cost.
And with whom?
So how a diagnosis works for children is generally a multidisciplinary team. So it would be led by by a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and it would include an occupational therapist, a speech and language therapist, perhaps a social worker. It's not like a diagnosis in terms of, obviously, it's not a medical difference, so there's not a blood test. It's very much about observing the person's development. If it's a child, you're doing that in real time, so you're maybe observing them in school, observing them in a clinical setting, observing them at home, talking to family, talking to parents. What we're seeing in recent years, I suppose, is an adult diagnosis. So we're seeing more and more people who, when they went to school, there wasn't that awareness of autism, particularly, it has to be said, autistic female.
But did they start, all these people that you mentioned, did they start with, I think he may be autistic or she may be autistic, let's work backwards
Absolutely.
Behavior.
And actually, often to arrive at an autism diagnosis, what you're actually doing is ruling out other possible explanations. So, for example, one of the first pieces of work that often happens in an autism assessment is a hearing test, because perhaps parents will say, you know, he doesn't respond to me, he's not answering my questions, so you check hearing. So very often to arrive at an autism diagnosis, what you're actually doing is ruling out other possible explanations. If you're an autistic adult, it's not that you started being autistic at 40. The actual measure what you're trying to do is, were these differences always there, but we're only identifying them now?
Yeah, for people like me, I mean, my first experience was, you know, because my age, I suppose, the Dustin Hoffman movie, and people who could, you know, just look at the telephone directory and see all the names and just recite it from A to Z. Mm. You know what I mean? It's sort of, geez, that's a particularly amazing skill. I wonder what gives you that. I mean, was that Hollywood, or is there some truth in that?
Well, I think what's really interesting in the Same Chance report today is we asked people, you know, how did they feel about the depiction of autism in the media? And that was, you know, very poor. So I think generally speaking, a lot of those depictions, while they can certainly start a conversation and we'll always avail of that opportunity, I think they can actually just be very kind of stereotypical. Mm-hmm. Autism is a very vast spectrum. People have very different experiences. But I think what's the common thread, if you like, is those barriers. So whether that's differences in communication, differences in knowing what to expect when you're going somewhere new, differences in the sensory environment. So while the day-to-day life can be different, it's the barriers that are common, and that's really where we need to put a focus. You know, sometimes when I talk to people, they'll say to me, you know, when I went to school, I didn't know any autistic people. And I always respond to that because in Ireland, we're coming from a very low base. In the 1950s in Ireland, we institutionalised more people per capita than any other nation on earth. The USSR came a poor second. So if you were different in any way, people were segregated and hidden in the community. We're only now getting to a point where, thankfully, a majority of autistic people attend the mainstream school. And yet there's still barriers. I mean, we're supporting families at the minute that sometimes have to apply to 20, 30, 40 schools to get a school place.
Right.
People travelling 70 kilometres round.
You were shut away in a way because, you know, you're a young guy, and then you went to a special school to start.
Absolutely.
We're talking recent times.
Recent times, and I mean, what we want to get to, I suppose, is a point where every child has the opportunity to attend their local school, if that's what's right for them. And I think there's still a huge journey to go in that. I mean, I talk to children and their parents who travel 70 kilometre round trips to go to school. Now, they might be in a mainstream school, but that's not inclusion, you know, to be left behind in your community in that way. You know, we literally do have a practice in Ireland of busing people bussed out of their communities when some schools don't stand up to the plate and open autism classes.
Now, it comes to charity events and things, and hopefully we get to later on talk about different changes that have been made, like supermarkets having special times for people to go to and all that. But let's talk about the cycle, let's talk about, you know, the charity events that you're actually involved in to highlight autistic people and autism.
Thank you so much. So I suppose what we do is very much try and build the capacity of autistic people and families to engage in day-to-day life. So we've quite a range of supports. We operate an autism information line. We set it up in late 2021. We've supported nearly 7,500 people since opening it. You know, one of the realities, I think, if you're autistic, is the word that you're most used to is no. No, I'm not the right person to talk to. Sorry, we can't help. No, there's a waiting list for that. As an organisation, we try and be the people to say yes. Yes, we can help. Yes, we will provide support. We can't replace the HSE, but we can do what we can to try and provide the right support at the right time. So we have a child and family support program. About 3,500 families access support from that at present. We have supports for autistic adults because there really is no services in that regard. So social groups, employment support. We do initiatives like an ID card program that helps people if they're travelling in an airport or going somewhere new for the first time. But all of this obviously takes a huge amount of investment, and we have to raise the vast majority of the funds ourselves. So we are asking people to show their support. And, you know, very often family members will say, I'd love to do something, but I don't know what it is. Maybe I can't, you know, help in terms of childcare. Maybe I don't know a lot about autism. What you can do is come to one of our events. It's a way of highlighting the issue. It's a way of showing your support to the families or people in your life who are autistic, and it helps us raise funds. So next Sunday on the 7th of April, we're having a really special Same Chance Walk. It's in Belmont Domain in Greystones, and I want to recognise they've been so good to us in hosting the event free of charge. And it's a 5 kilometre inclusive walk. All are welcome. It's an accessible experience, and it will be a chance to highlight the issue, to raise funds, but also it's a bit of a family fun day and a celebration of our 10th anniversary as well. We're going to have Killian O'Connor there, who people might know. He came third on Britain's Got Talent, and he's an autistic magician, only 14 years old, recently signed by Simon Cowell. We're going to have a petting zoo. We're going to have Lego, arts and crafts, and all are welcome. So the registration information is on our website, and we would really love if people can join us on the day. If you can't make that, or you're maybe more ambitious from an exercise point of view, on the 18th of May, you can come back to County Wicklow, and we're doing our 100 kilometre cycle. Starts in the Carlisle Ground in Bray. The Bray Wanderers are a good partner.
Better you than me, but you can.
And it brings you right through the hills of Wicklow, Lara, yeah. Roundwood. So we'd love, all the details are on the fundraising page on our website, and just on this World Autism Day, we're asking people to think about how they might support us.
Right. And two last questions. One, how would I know somebody is autistic?
I think that's a really interesting question, because actually when we ask the public, there's very divided, would I know or would I not know? One of the experiences of being autistic is masking. So unfortunately, we live in a society that instead of often saying, we want to meet your support needs, we see them as positive differences, there's a lot of stigma. So a lot of the time people mask their experiences. So, you know, often we'd hear children say who in school, they sit in the classroom, they appear to learn all day, and when they go home, they're exhausted and extremely overwhelmed. So we often say the thicker the mask, the more significant the impact on mental health. That said, there are common differences that we can be aware of. And what we did this year in the Attitudes to Autism poll was quite interesting. So usually when we do this every year, we say, would you make friends with someone who's autistic? Would you hire someone? And of course, the public tell us, of course we would. But in the Same Chance report, the community tell a very different story on the ground. So this year, instead of asking about autism, we asked about day-to-day interactions. So we said things like, would you be comfortable having a conversation with somebody who avoids eye contact? How would you feel if a colleague in work asked you to send an email instead of speaking to them? If someone can't sit still or be quiet, should they be allowed go to the cinema? And unfortunately, what that has showed is there's a huge amount of work to be done. You know, in a majority of cases, for example, people are uncomfortable with people who don't make eye contact. And nearly half of us think if a child's overwhelmed in public, parents just need to be stricter. And that judgment has such an impact on family life. You know, it can really be the barrier to inclusion. So I suppose what we're saying is, in our day-to-day life, we see differences all the time. The way to being accepting of autistic people isn't to wait for someone to come up in a t-shirt that says, I'm autistic, and then you're kind. It's actually about the next time someone communicates a little bit differently, the next time someone's overwhelmed, before we jump to judgment, just realise that, yes, the person might be autistic, or we live in a very diverse society, and if we cut each other some slack, I think we go a long way to making a better Ireland and a more inclusive society.
Right. Well, great to see you again, Adam.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the day and the month, indeed, and well done on all your work with As I Am. And Adam is CEO of As I Am. I'm not asking Adam to comment on this, but breaking news is that Simon Coveney is stepping down from Cabinet, and I'm sure there's more discussion points to be had around the dinner table. But anyway, thanks very much indeed,
thanks,
Adam.
Thanks, Declan. Appreciate it.
Great to see you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Adam Harris there. Okay, CEO of As I Am. And more on our outside broadcast from the Beach House, which is a great pub and music venue and food venue here in Greystones. And we're celebrating World Autism Day. Back in just a...
The Morning Show with Declan Meehan on East Coast FM.
With thanks to Codling Wind Park. Visit Codling Wind Park in Wicklow Library between 16th and 18th of April to find out how we're supporting local communities and generating a greener Ireland.
Yeah, and just to say that breaking news that Simon Coveney, Minister, is stepping away from Cabinet. Okay, our number here is 087-7711-103, and we're having an outside broadcast today from the Beach House in Greystones, celebrating World Autism Day. And Zara Doyle is here. She's a parent, advocate, and As I Am training manager. And Zara, I mean, How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, thank you for dropping along to us today on this World Autism Day. What does that actually mean to you, that it is, there's a special day prescribed as such?
Yeah, I suppose I'm here with a number of different kind of perspectives and hats, I guess. I'm a parent. I'm also a late diagnosed autistic person. I have been working in the autism area for at least 15 years. So I've really seen kind of the journey, I suppose, that society has taken in terms of understanding what autism is. And part of my role within As I Am as the training manager is really looking at how we can provide that basic understanding and more in-depth understanding of living experience of being autistic in Ireland. So we'd work a lot with different organisations. Any sector at all really would be coming to us to understand more about what exactly autism is.
Mm. What difficulties did you have? I mean, you said you were late diagnosed, mm-hmm. so there was a challenge to be had for people to recognise you, first of all, but you to grapple with life and society and things along the way. So how was that?
Absolutely. So, you know, for women particularly who are autistic, there's a lot more masking involved.
Which means what?
Masking would be, you know, trying to fit in with the rest of your environment. I suppose trying to adapt yourself to everyone else's social expectations of what you should be as a human being. So we tend to work very hard on the mask that we might use. And then, you know, similar to what Adam was talking about with after a full day of school and coming home and maybe falling apart or, you know, feeling more comfortable in your safe space. So you're really aware of your comfort zone and stepping outside of your comfort zone. I think it's that self-awareness piece. We're highly sensitive people. So we would, you know, really be aware of those barriers in the environment. We would be in tune with all of the unsaid things that are happening around us. So by social osmosis, a neurotypical person might pick up on, you know, there might be an atmosphere within a room, you know, or the tension maybe between two people, whereas an autistic person might need to explicitly name that in order to understand it. Yeah.
Right, okay. I was just wondering how we would recognise and make things better for you. And I'm saying I haven't been diagnosed. Maybe I'm going to be a late diagnosed person or whatever. But how would I know in a room? How would I know to be better?
I think rather than trying to understand who is autistic within the room, we actually treat everybody with the same sort of universal approach to how we communicate and how we understand social interaction. What's good for autistic people is good really for all people, to be honest. So, you know, we're quite truthful in the way that we approach different situations. We take things at face value. We can be quite literal in the way we communicate. And therefore, you know, it's helpful to say what you mean. You know, things like sarcasm or social nuances are often missed in conversations. So how we approach inclusion in different ways is really important.
And can you offend people by being too literal?
Oh, of course.
And what effect does that have then on your interactivity?
I think as a result of masking for almost 37 years before I got my diagnosis, I learned to kind of deal with that in a very immediate way. It's almost like you're conditioned to be a neurotypical in a, you know, a neurodiverse world. So, yeah, you become more adept at those social interactions.
Right. And your training manager. So
yes.
Who do you train and what do you train them
Absolutely
for?
Absolutely anybody. So we would work with everybody from early years. We had most recently our launch of the Autism Friendly Parliament, which was a really interesting project.
Right, what is that? I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so you can actually find out more information on their accessibility page on Leinster House. So we worked extensively for over a year with a committee within Leinster House, and all of the staff, we trained up their catering, their security. We had members attending training sessions, and it was a real focus on understanding and accepting autism from lots of different lenses, and examining how we communicate and invite people into Leinster House and actually be able to access the environment. So I don't know if you've been to Leinster House, but there's always the bells that go off throughout the day, and that can be quite off-putting for a lot of autistic people when they don't know what to expect. So it's really about providing that predictability within the environment so we can prepare ourselves, you know, and really be able to access it just like everybody else can.
Yeah. Is the world getting better?
Absolutely. But there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. Is that because of the training you're doing and people are more accepting and people get to hear of more autistic people?
I think definitely society is more accepting to different stories and listening to individuals' understanding of what autism means to them, which is incredible. But it has taken a long time to get to this space, and I think we still have a lot of work to do in terms of barrier-free design for autistic people and also wider society, you know, people with dementia, people with physical disabilities, all of that. And it's really focusing in on, you know, there is no one size that fits all, and that we need to make these accommodations for people.
Yeah, when I hear it said, how would you, you know, if you met an autistic person, well, you've met an autistic person. You haven't met all the different people on the spectrum. So, you know, we really have to work harder at sort of recognising and helping, don't we?
Absolutely.
You know, so what would you like if there was one thing to change, well, particularly?
Good question. How do I pick just one? I think that everyone spends, particularly the month of April, really trying to understand that, you know, there is not just one type of autism. We don't all fit into a specific diagnosis of autism. We are all unique and interesting people and should have the same chance as everybody else.
Okay, well, that's very informative. Zara, great to meet you as well. Thank you very much indeed for coming along this morning. Thank you. That's Zara Doyle there, who's a parent and advocate, as I am, training manager and a late diagnosed person with autism. Very good of you to drop along to us. Thank you. Also here this morning is Anita Nolan. She's a mother of two autistic children and founder of Little Warriors Group in Arklow. We spoke before, I think.
We did indeed.
Yes, when you were telling me about this amazing scheme that you had in Arklow. Just remind us.
Thanks for having me on this morning. Yeah, so Little Warriors is a support group that we have set up in Arklow, and it's for children with autism and additional needs. So it's a weekly sensory play and support groups. We meet in Funworks in Arklow, and it's from 9:30 to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. And it's just a safe space where parents can come with their children. Their children can be themselves.
Yes.
No, there's going to be no judgment, and it's full of support. And the parents get to meet other parents and share stories, give advice. And it's just, it's so important for parents to have that safe space and to meet other parents so they don't feel alone. And it's really inclusive.
Yeah, and you were telling me that the people in that safe space were very, you know, amenable to the approaches.
Yeah, no, definitely. I used to make a joke that when parents come up and go, oh, my child does this and mine, I'm like, it's fine. I was like, do you know what, even if your child wants to lick a window, let me know and I'll make sure the windows are clean before. It's just having that place where it's so important that you can be yourself unapologetically. And that's what we created up there, is that parents, because you're already stressed out on a daily basis, it's so hard at home. Kids have meltdowns, they stim. They could be nonverbal and communicate in different ways. And sometimes going to different events or activities, parents are conscious of that. And you could be quite nervous and you might want to, you'll avoid those situations going, oh, like I know personally with my son, he's a high flight risk. Like he is six, but he still has a harness because if he got a second, he's gone. He's like Forrest Gump. He is gone. So I'm quite nervous bringing him to places. But when I go to Little Warriors or any of the activities or events that Little Warriors organise, I feel safe bringing him there because not only has he got me to protect him and support him, there's about 30 other mammies that are like, I've got him, don't worry, I've got him. And to be able to have that support and to feel that relaxed and accepted, it's worth its weight in gold.
And what difference has it made to home life?
So much. Like, when my first little boy Mason got diagnosed with autism, it was just, I felt so lonely. I felt like isolated. I actually affected my mental health because I didn't know, what do I do? Am I doing enough for him? Am I not doing enough for him? Am I doing too much? Am I not? You know, it was so hard. And then all my friends had neurotypical children, so as supportive as they were, they didn't fully understand what I was going through. So to have a group now with other families that are living what I live is just unbelievable, and it has changed our family life because it's given me confidence. I've made lifelong friends. My children have made friends. Like, my little boy Dunica is nonverbal, and he's not very social. Like, even at home, if we're sitting at the kitchen table having dinner, he'll go out to the hall to have his because he just doesn't want to sit with us. But when we're at Little Warriors, there's two little kids, Aaliyah and Cottle, and he will literally follow them around, and it's like, oh hello. And it's brilliant just for him to have that. Like,
yeah. And do you worry for the future?
Constantly. I actually put a post about this on Instagram the other day. My biggest fear is the future. I have two boys, and they're both autistic, but they're both polar opposites. So Mason is verbal. He's in a unit. He is doing unbelievably well, and he's really social, and he loves new things. He loves trying new things. And I'm like, yeah, he just needs a little bit more support and someone to kind of just keep an eye on him and make sure he's on the right path when he's older. Then I have Dunica, and Dunica's a different kettle of fish altogether. So he's non-verbal, he's very antisocial, he's got no sense of danger, he's a high flight risk, and he's got a lot of other challenges that need a lot of help, support, and round-the-clock care. And my fear for him is, if something happened to me or my husband, who's going to look after him? Who's going to be there for him? Will he be able to live independently? Or, you know, they're my fears. But I have learned that I need to not think that far into the future, that I need to stay in the now. And that's what I'm trying really, really hard to do.
Right. What supports do you get?
So both my boys are under our Children Disability Network team, the CDNT in Arklow. To be honest, Mason doesn't get an awful lot of support. He's on the school age wait list, which, you know, I'm not going to give out about the team. The team are absolutely fabulous. They're amazing, and they help wherever they can. They're just incredibly understaffed, and there's so much pressure on them, and the lists are just ridiculous now at this stage. So I'm not going to bash them in any way. They do try help and support in every way that they can. Dunica would get a lot more support than Mason because he's younger, so he's still in the early intervention team, but also Dunica has a diagnosis of severe intellectual disabilities alongside his autism, so he has great higher needs, but you don't get enough support. You really don't. Like, even for school, we fought for school last year for Dunica. He turned 5. I applied to 8 schools. He didn't get a place. Lucky enough, because he was turning 5 in the October, he got to do an extra year of early intervention in the unit that he's in. This year we applied to 14 schools, and up until the end of March I had 10 no's, and I was really stressed and really panicking that we're going to have another year now that he has no school. Now, thankfully, he did get a place in a school in the end, but I know other parents that are so stressed right now and still don't have a school place, and it's a real worry and fear.
Is it just no, or is it no because?
A lot of them are no, but they're placed on a waitlist. They don't have the space, because units, there's only 6 children per class in a unit. Most schools can only facilitate 1 or 2 classes, maybe. And then the special schools as well, like, I know one of the schools we applied to only had 9 places, another school we applied to only had 1 place. But I also knew 42 children apply for that one place. You know, there's just not enough spaces, unfortunately.
You and your family do amazing work. I know you do with love as well, but it's amazing what you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, no, we're really proud of it. And Little Warriors, I always say it's like my fifth baby. I'm so proud of it. And we've made so many friends. And it's really helped so many families, and alongside helping me personally. And then other groups as well, like our teen club, The House, which is run by Carol. Like, that's helping kids now from the ages of 10 to 16. And that has just gone from strength and strength. They've even started an MMA class now. My heart is being in my throat when I see them in there practicing their MMA, but sure. Okay. Then obviously we have the All Kind of Amazing, which is run by Jenny, and that's our monthly support group, and it meets the last Thursday of every month in the Arklow Library. And then we have the Arklow Little Vikings that has just launched as well with the Special Olympics, and that is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love it.
Great to have a chat again, Anita.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming up to us here from Arklow. Anita Nolan, mother of two autistic children and founder of Little Warriors Group in Arklow. Great to meet you again. Thank you. It's
The Morning Show with Declan Meehan on East Coast FM.
With thanks to Codling Wind Park. Visit Codling Wind Park in Wicklow Library between 16th and 18th of April to find out how we're supporting local communities and generating a greener Ireland.
Yes, The Morning Show at East Coast FM. It's World Autism Day and we're celebrating that. We're at the Beach House in Greystones, and right now two guests for you to meet. Ben Russom, who's here, and Laura Smith. You're both very welcome. Thanks very much, Declan.
Thanks for having us.
They're going to give us a first-hand account of what it's like to live with autism in Ireland. And Laura first. Okay. What is it like, Laura? I mean, that's what it says here.
Yeah.
You've a lot to say, I'm told.
Oh, right. Yes. No, I don't like talking at all. I don't know where you heard that.
That's to encourage you. So. Yeah.
Well, it's getting me to stop talking. That's the problem. it's, you know, it's been tough, you know. I mean, because as you can tell from my accent, I was born in the UK.
Right, whereabouts?
So South Croydon, so Purley.
Okay, near Gatwick, yeah.
Out near there, because my dad's English and my mum's Irish. So I moved over to Ireland when I was 13, but it wasn't easy there either, you know, because there was, especially before I was diagnosed with autism, there was, you know, no understanding, and that makes life very difficult. I mean, living with autism is hard anyway, and, you know, sometimes people ask, you know, what are the advantages of living with autism? But, you know, I mean, not saying it's the worst thing ever, you know, when their child is diagnosed, it can be very difficult. But you want to reassure them as well. But, you know, I wouldn't say advantages, because...
Mm. Well, barriers then.
Yeah, well, barriers. No, definitely 100% barriers, because, you know, there are so many things that you have to overcome and things that you have to work on. But that also that autism shouldn't define us, you know, that's what we say all the time. And as I am, like, when we've done different campaigns and different, you know, anything that we've done, it's always autism doesn't define us. But yeah, but growing up with autism, it has been difficult, and it still is now, you know, anxiety levels, and kind of if I do get stressed, people kind of looking, you shouldn't have done that, like as if I'm being badly behaved, and, you know, judgment. But then having said that, there have also been people who have been very incredibly supportive. And, like, for example, when I was in primary school in England, before I was diagnosed, there was an SNA that I had, and she was incredible, and she just worked with me and helped me, and that made a huge difference.
And you remember that, and what the positive effect that she's had
definitely. Yes. And I still talk about her to this day, and I still keep in touch with her to this day. And then obviously as I am. I mean, as I am has just really changed my life. It's why I'm here talking with you.
Well, well done, Lara. Can I talk to Ben here for a second? Ben, yeah. You know, listening to what Lara is saying and what other speakers are saying, you've a label. Do you know what I mean? What does that feel like? Oh, there's somebody who's autistic, you know?
I suppose it depends what way you're looking at it, what way you phrase it, and depends on the context as well. So, I suppose a little bit of my backstory before I delve into your question there, Declan. I was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder in 2003. I was 3 years old, and I would have been classified as moderately autistic. So, the spectrum, certainly back in 2003, was very linear. You're either mild, moderate, or severe, and there was no real shaking it around at that time. So I was someone who had little to no language, or at least the language I did have at that age, it was just babble, completely discernible. I wasn't walking, I wasn't doing the normal developmental things that children did at that age. So my parents were obviously very concerned, and when the diagnosis obviously came out then, it became a very lonely world very quickly for my parents, because it's a matter of, what does my child's future look like? Where do I go to? What resources can I even avail of? So I suppose it was a label that has been attached to me from the word go, but on account of the way I was raised by my parents and the way we always spoke about autism at home, it was never a negative label. It wasn't like, now Ben, you have autism, you need to watch out for yada yada. No, you have autism. That means you're able to do X, Y, and Z. Does that mean that you don't have challenges? Of course not. Obviously, there are various, you mentioned the word earlier, Declan, barriers, I think so. I would have very bad anxiety. I have a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder. And joint at the hip there would be like auditory sensitivities and social anxiety. So if I'm in a restaurant where there's a lot of noise and raucous laughter, that's a very anxiety-inducing situation for me. Or if I'm in the supermarket and the toddler in the pram or the trolley is completely lost, it is another classic example. Or a plane is worse because you can't move anywhere. For someone else, that might be annoying. But for me, that's very anxiety-inducing, and I get overwhelmed. And unfortunately, the more overwhelmed you become, often this can flow over then into what is often dubbed a meltdown, an autistic meltdown, which isn't very pretty to look at nor be in, is what I'll say. But I think in terms, so the answer to your question, Declan, is twofold. Number one, the way in which I was raised, it was always a positive thing to be on the autism spectrum and to take pride in that because of what you can do. Rather than you can't, because we tend to blow up the dis part of disability. But the second thing as well is, Lara will have mentioned, as I am earlier, Ireland's autism organisation, and myself and Lara have been privileged enough to have been part of their youth leadership team for
three years, I think.
On the back of that, I've remained involved in autism and disability advocacy, and one of the things that was often talked about, particularly on a collegiate level, is the medical model of disability versus the social model of disability. Now this, depending on the context, can just be a matter of opinion, but just to give you a sense of what I'm talking about, if you're talking about the medical model, you might say someone is a disabled person, you might say,
but the word disorder was used in your initial diagnosis.
That is true, and it's possible maybe going forward that it's a term that they may try to redefine or do away with. Sure, we even live in a day and age now where Asperger's syndrome is actually quite a defunct term, and that the spectrum has sort of gone from being less linear to almost spherical. I heard someone describe it as, I can't remember who it was, but
are you more accepted in the world?
I would subscribe to that sort of spherical model, if that's what we're going to call it, because the autism spectrum is so broad, and we have a saying in As I Am, you and I, Lara.
Yeah.
You know it already. Why don't you say it?
Oh, are you sure?
Yeah, okay. Go on.
When you meet one person with autism, you meet one person with autism. And it's so true, because when we first joined the youth leadership team, you know, we were all chatting and we were all, obviously we all had similarities, but then we're all, you know, saying, oh gosh, I struggle with this, but we're all so different. But then yet we all got along so well, and we still do to this day. No, it's been an incredible thing to have.
Well, listen, lads, thanks very much for dropping in.
Thank you.
We're going to try and talk to as many people as possible, and you're very good to share the stories with us today.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Declan.
Great to talk to you both, Ben and Laura. Thank you.
Thank you.
The
Morning Show with Declan Meehan on East Coast FM.
With thanks to Codling Wind Park. Visit Codling Wind Park in Wicklow Library between 16th and 18th of April to find out how we're supporting local communities and generating a greener Ireland.
Yes, Morning Show at East Coast FM. We're live from the Beach House in Greystones. As I am, the organisation started in Greystones, and we're here celebrating World Autism Day. Now we're joined by Dr. Rebecca Quinn, who's a psychologist working in Bray with an expertise on autism. You're very welcome, Rebecca. Thanks for travelling to us this morning.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me.
Great stuff. And autism, I mean, you as a, we'll say, a lay person looking at possibility of making or being involved in a diagnosis. I mean, what's that like from the outside?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. I think there's a lot of myths out there, and I think parents sometimes maybe jump to the conclusion that maybe one or two isolated features mean that their child might have a diagnosis of autism. But actually, there's quite a number of different features, and we're looking at three core common areas. So typically, children that get a diagnosis of autism, they would have challenges across three core areas: communication, their social interaction, and sensory differences as well. And sometimes there's some behavioural differences as well. So these often emerge from a young age, but sometimes they're identified maybe later on in life. And for example, with communication, just to give an example, things that might appear early on would be, for example, a child that maybe doesn't like eye contact, maybe their language isn't developing as other children their age, their language might be developing. It might be a little bit delayed, or they might have very sophisticated language. So it manifests very differently. As previous speakers have said, once you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. So, for parents to be mindful, I guess, that, you know, it's never one isolated feature.
And can these behaviours, rather than conditions, can these behaviours be attributed to something else?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Which is why there's such a comprehensive assessment process. So often, for example, a child that has maybe delayed language, along with some sensory differences, that could present as autism, but in fact it's not. It is, as I mentioned, those two areas of need. Selective mutism, often there's a big overlap there with autism. And then in teenagers, what we see is if you're maybe prone to social anxiety, that there can be an overlap there with some autistic behaviours as well.
Yeah,
so and there's lots of overlap.
Parents are brilliant at noticing first, and obviously there can be not behaving properly. What role would the health visitor have and the conversations with parents? Where does all that come in?
Yeah, sure. And it's often, quite often actually, the referrals that come into us on the Disability Network teams, they are from public health nurses or GPs. And often I find that the workers in creches and play schools, they can be, especially the more experienced staff, are very adept at picking up some of the differences that we see in autistic children. So and often there's maybe lots of conversations that are had with the parents beforehand about making a referral. It's often pointed out initially by the people working with the child.
Right, and should parents worry?
I wouldn't think so.
My child is different to other children.
And I think that's, there really is a shift in narrative going on, I think, moving away from this idea of autism being deficit-based to being a difference, we all come with different brains into the world, and I think that's what a neuroaffirmative practice is all about. And I think that is what is informing the public at the moment.
Yeah, that's enlightening now compared to before.
Yeah, it really is, actually. And there's genetic studies to show that this neurodivergent gene keeps coming forward in the gene pool because there's biological adaptation to it, I suppose. It's positive. We need it. We need different brains to see the world differently, to solve problems differently, to just enlighten our world.
Yeah, and have that variation.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. That's Rebecca Quinn. She's a doctor, psychologist working in Bray. Also with us is Michael O'Flanagan, who works with As I Am Community Support. Michael, what is that now in As I Am?
Yeah, thanks for having us. And it's great to be here with different colleagues. So the community support team is probably one of the oldest departments in As I Am. It's made up of our casework team, our information line, our policy work and our family support. And I suppose the information line, which is over 2 years old now since its inception, has supported over 8,200 families. And looking at the issues that come in, they can be varied. Education is particularly a hot topic that comes into as families looking for support and accessing an appropriate school place, understanding the diagnosis. So if a family has just received an autism diagnosis, they can ring up our autism information line. That's open Monday to Thursday, 10 p.m. to 3 p.m., 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they can also email support at As I Am. And I suppose the information line is there to just provide that listening ear to families in the first instance, but also to support them with other aspects of their child's diagnosis. And we're always very happy to hear from families. Outside of that, then, we have our family support program, which is just over a year old. And since its inception, we have supported 3,000 families across the country. And that gives an outlet to families to access programs such as Educate and Empower, which is a 6-week program for families, that's for children who are recently diagnosed, for families to access that support. It looks at understanding the diagnosis, it looks at topics such as education, sensory processing, and also rights and entitlements, which could cover issues such as social
and
protection.
And this is all for us outside, you know, the autistic community as such, to make us understand and value people who are autistic. You've got a brother, isn't that right?
That's right. I suppose my journey to autism has started with my brother Gavin, who is now 14. He'll be 15 this August. Gavin is autistic. He also has an intellectual disability as well. He's pre-verbal, but he has a few words, and he uses those words to communicate different preferences. And it's through Gavin that we as a family, and I myself, have come to become involved within the autistic community. And I just, on a personal note, it's one of the great privileges that I have working in As I Am, working on the community support team, giving life to those issues that families are experiencing, because I see those issues on a personal level. I see the challenges, the systemic barriers that exist outside society. And there are things that we're working on as I am, try to break down those. But Gavin is the reason for the work that I do in As I Am, and also my stepmom Kira as well. We work together outside of the work that I do in As I Am.
Right, and you obviously need funding and things, which is next Sunday, the latest part. So, Rebecca, if people wonder what should my next step be, I suspect that maybe my child is slightly different. We've heard deficit of services and things, but what's next?
I would say give it a little bit of time. I think children develop at different rates, and I think that's a really important point to remember. And first off, secondly, I would discuss it with somebody that you know is experienced in working with children, be it the PHN or the creche leader, or your GP. And then there's lots of, I suppose, screening questionnaires that can be carried out. The PHN, for example, could carry out a screening questionnaire that will help identify, are there actually enough differences here to warrant an assessment? And if there are, then there's three routes that you can go. You can go down the assessment of need route, which is the part of the public system. You can make a referral straight into your local children's disability network team, and thirdly, you can go down the private assessment route. There are some primary care teams that do autism assessments, but the first three are your main routes, really.
Right, okay. We'll talk about, well, not us, but in future programmes, about, you know, the challenges there with services available and whatever. But at the moment, is there a long waiting list for a lot of these services?
Yes, there is, yeah. The wait lists across the CDNTs are quite substantial. The AON process is, I suppose, helping with that to some extent. However, the assessment of needs are being carried out within the CDNT by the large part, but there are some private providers to whom we outsource these assessments, and that does help with the waiting lists.
Very good. Well, it's great to meet you, Rebecca, and thank you very much indeed for dropping in to us here at Greystones. Dr. Rebecca Quinn, psychologist working in Bray, and thanks to Michael. And you know, telling us about your journey with your brother, and the best of luck, because you're working in community support in the charity, as I am. Great, great to meet you too, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Michael O'Flanagan there. And that is our number one of our outside broadcast for World Autism Day here at the Beach House in Greystones. Yes, welcome back to The Morning Show. We're live from the Beach House in Greystones for a very special show to mark World Autism Day today, which takes place all over the world. And the show today is in collaboration with the autism charity As I Am, which is celebrating 10 years of service. And we'll be finding out about the work they do and about how you can help by joining their Same Chance Walk, which is on Sunday. And also, we've been speaking to various guests who've had either their own personal experiences with autism or work with adults and children with autism. And we've been in position to welcome back three of our speakers from the last hour. You're all very welcome back into the, not the same seats, but almost. And they are Anita Nolan, Zara Doyle and Michael O'Flanagan. And we're going to hang on to them now for a discussion along the lines of our panel at the 11:05 on Friday. A panel discussion this time about autism. And you know, to look back on what we've discovered over the last hour, was there anything that stood out for you from various speakers, including yourself, Anita?
A lot has... Listening to everyone is just really inspiring, hearing everyone's stories, and it's shown me as a parent as well how far we've come as a country as well, but there's still so much more we need to do.
Yeah, so let's start with you. What's the biggest barrier in Ireland?
Right now, I think we're spreading awareness and acceptance and really promoting inclusion. Now, we have come a long way. We really have. Like, I can speak for Arklow, where I'm based. And when I had my first son, there was absolutely nothing. There was nowhere for me to go. There was nowhere for me to bring him.
You're left on your own.
We were on our own. Even like going to the play park was just such a struggle for us. Fast forward 10 years, we now have a teen club. We now have a parent support group. We have the Special Olympics. And then obviously we have Little Warriors. Recently, they actually had their first sensory area for St. Patrick's Day. So my son, Donica, got to actually experience the St. Patrick's Parade for the first time ever. So that was social inclusion at its finest. I'm really proud where Arklow has come, but I think we need to do so much more. So much more that needs to be done.
And Zara, you know, you are on both sides of the fence, but what should people know more about?
About autism.
Yes.
I think not to be afraid. I think there's a lot of fear around the topic of autism. Particularly for families, you know, speaking their living experience on the day to day, you know, not to be afraid to ask for help. Sometimes it can be, there's a shame kind of attached to being a carer sometimes, or it can be, you know, on behalf of advocating like for your child, thinking that you're being that parent, you know, asking for food to be cut up a certain way due to sensory sensitivities, or to bring ear defenders as a reasonable accommodation for the school classroom environment. Just not to be afraid to have a conversation with a parent, and that support, you know, and being open to discussion is really important. So starting the conversation there.
And that was it Super Value in Greystones, was it? I think supermarket, they were having certain times where people could go and do some shopping, and they would take into consideration autistic people.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the autism hour that we hear about, I mean, it is great as a starting point, but what we should be really doing is having an all-encompassing service that we're providing for families of autistic people and for autistic people as adults as well. We're not, you know, we don't stay as children for very long, so there is a huge population of autistic adults that need to find accessible customer experience as well. And that's a lot of what we do in As I Am, is trying to change those attitudes around creating that customer experience.
And Michael, and you've got your brother, and also you work for As I Am. So are you second-guessing every situation when you're with your brother? You're looking at, okay, how do I protect him at the same time? How do I, you know, make sure that he's okay? And then what we could do here if just with a little bit of extra thought?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very good question. And as you said, you know, a couple of things come to mind. I think in the first instance, we have come a long way as a society, and that's something to be recognised and something to be acknowledged. One thing we need to work on is our judgment. There's still a lot of judgment in society, and you'll see that in the Attitudes to Autism poll, the Same Chance research as well. And when I look at my brother Gavin and when we're going out, I take him out in the car. He loves being out in the car. He loves going out and drives and so on. And there's times where we might go into some places. Like last year, for example, I can think of when we went into a restaurant. He was stimming. He was on the floor. And one guest of the restaurant in particular, you know, came over, and she was quite admonishing to Gavin in particular, and that in itself kind of set us back a little bit, because, you know, and to be fair to that individual, she probably didn't know he was autistic, but nonetheless her approach wasn't
he was
the best.
Bold was that
it's just more so he was in the wrong place. He shouldn't be there, and therefore needs to be removed and so on, without acknowledging why he was in that position in the first place. He was on the floor, he was colouring. Now Gavin has said he's 14 as such, but you are aware, you are mindful as to places that you go to, and that's a reality. But it's a reality that we need to move away from, both as individuals and as society, and, you know, businesses as well. You know, in creating the Same Chance for society, it takes everyone to move along with that, not just one organisation or one individual. It takes a community and a village, and I suppose breaking down those barriers of judgment for me is a key aspect of, you know, ensuring that everybody in society, particularly autistic individuals, you know, have the same opportunity to be who they want to be and can be and should be.
Adam Harris is a remarkable guy, and we've had him on the programme for years and years now. But is there any role models out there that are showing positive signs? You say, well, goodness me, look at that person. Anybody come to mind?
Like, I think, without naming anyone in particular, I think, you know, there are people out there now who are becoming more vocal about their diagnosis, and people are looking up to them in particular ways, whether they're singers or whether they're actors and so on. And I think anybody who is autistic and is willing to put themselves out there is you know, is an important thing. Not everybody is willing to, and that's fair, and that has to be acknowledged as well. But I think more actors, more singers, more influencers, if I can call them that, are putting themselves out there, and people are saying, okay, actually, I might be autistic. I'm going to seek, you know, going to explore this a little bit more. So I think, you know, in general, people are becoming more accepting of their diagnosis, and therefore putting themselves out there. And whether it's the ordinary Joe on the street, or whether it's someone who has, you know, 50,000 followers on TikTok, each of those experiences are equally as valid. Yeah.
And Anita, you've had all these struggles at the schools and trying to find them. You've got your Saturday morning me time with the kids, and is that all there is? I mean, I'm sure society, I'm not singling out our club, because everywhere is probably the same.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's any more we all could be doing, and other, and businesses could be doing, and people could be doing.
100%. Like, there's so much more that we can be doing. And like what was said there, it all starts with a conversation. And like, speaking from my own experience, like I've said, I felt so lonely, so isolated. I had no one to talk to. I had no one to ask for advice. I didn't know what it was to do, what not to do. And when I set up Little Warriors, we started off with 3 families. And fast forward 2 years now, we have a private WhatsApp group that families can be added to, from all our different groups. And there's 107 families in that group, and they're all helping each other, supporting each other. So it just highlights the absolute need across the country that these services or groups, support groups, activities are desperately needed. Like, we have families that come from Enniscorthy, Greystones, Bray to Arklow just for an hour and a half on a Saturday morning for their kids to play in a safe and friendly environment, an accepting environment. So if we have a 14-year-old that wants to sit on the ground and colour, no problem. We do, if we want to go out to a farm and we're bringing all the kids, and like I said, my son is Forrest Gump, he will, if he gets the chance, he'll run off. I feel more secure then because I know I have 20 to 30 other parents that are well aware that Donoghue can climb the first tree if he can get his foot in it, he's up it and he's gone. And they naturally all help and support each other. We need to be having more conversations in our communities where we can make every business, every facility, every club, playgrounds more accessibly and inclusive to everyone, because not two autistic people might not be the same. That's why it's called a spectrum. That's why it's so beautiful, like, because there's no two people that are the same. I've got two boys, they're polar opposite. One will stay by my side, listen to me, he loves changes, loves new things. I have another child that does everything in his power to get away by the nearest swimming pool.
Yeah, and looking at it, say, from the other side, Sarah, you know, businesses have businesses to run and they mightn't want disruption in that business because they're a business to run as such. You know, how can... Is it too segmentated to say, okay, at this time we're going to have autistic-friendly shopping, 3 to 5 on a Friday or something? Or should it be all the time?
So we get asked this question all the time, particularly in trainings. And what's important to note as well, that under the Disability Act 2005, every business has the responsibility, you know, to be accessible to all people. So not just, you know, autistic people, not just people who have mobility difficulties. So, you know, anything that you put in place for autistic people will actually benefit the whole of the population and society for the greater good. Like what we're asking for usually when it comes to training for businesses to be more accessible to the autistic population is to look at that predictability piece, make things more transparent, communicate in a specific way, you know, have some structure, and maybe not have, you know, the distracting elements of the environment like blaring a soundtrack in the background, so we can actually focus on the fact that we want to purchase something and we're not taken off into a different thought process, you know. So all of that can kind of impact on our experience as a customer. Yeah, I think those reasonable accommodations are a little ask, I suppose. We're not asking people to knock down walls or, you know, to completely restructure their business. We're asking them to just consider that people have different needs. And there are autistic people that will have also co-occurring conditions. So that could be ADHD, it could be dyslexia, dyspraxia, any of those things that can occur as part of a person's profile of need, you know. So, and there can also be things like depression and anxiety and mental health addition to that as a result of the barriers in the environment. So, you know, all of this will actually benefit everybody. The carer will have an easier time of advocating for their child if we remove those environmental barriers, you know, for families. So
yeah, but how do we marry that up, Michael, in that question? And you've got special experiences with your brother Gavin, but say if when Gavin gets older you want to go to nightclubs or something, or late night bars with music or something, you know, how does that continue yet the challenges that perhaps Gavin may have in the future?
Yeah, like I know I don't attend nightclubs myself, but I know there are some nightclubs where you can actually have, you know, air defenders on you and you can silent discos and so on, and people are bopping away and doing their own thing. Like, I think, as Zara said, you know, one change is not just benefiting the autistic individual, it's benefiting, you know, everybody's experience at the supermarket, for example. Going to nightclubs and so on is probably somewhat of a different kettle of fish, because you know what you're kind of getting yourself in for. There's going to be inevitably loud music. There doesn't have to be inevitably loud music at the supermarket when you're going to buy your tea bags or your milk or whatever the case may be. So there's a certain, I suppose, balance as
but
well.
But what about that question about segmenting the shopping time? Yeah. Or should it be all the time?
And I
take what Zara says... accessibility to all, probably always, but if they say, well, you know, we're making it special for the afternoon on a Wednesday.
I would agree with Zara. I would say all of the time. But what you don't want to happen is that, you know, there's tokenistic measures being put in place to tick a box. I wouldn't, you know, be supportive of that. I think, you know, if you can make the experience accessible for all, whether that's someone who's autistic or someone who's ADHD or someone who has an intellectual disability, you know, well, go for it. There's no harm in not. I don't see what the benefit would be in not making it accessible all of the time, as everybody else in society has, and bringing it back to As I Am's team and so on, the same chance. It's about creating that same chance and, you know, mitigating against, you know, the possible factors that, you know, or possible things that could go wrong in going to a supermarket, creating that predictability that, you know, needs to be there. There might be a song or something like that that might come on the radio that might be triggering for an autistic individual or may cause them to become overwhelmed, and that in itself will impact on the parent or the guardian or the carers, you know, as they're, you know, going about their day-to-day. So I would say, you know, all of the time, moving away from the tokenistic measures and bringing in full supportive measures to ensure that everything is as accessible as it can be and should be.
Right, we'll continue our conversation with Anita, with Zara and Michael in just a second. We're in the Beach House in Greystones for World. Now, with us today is Anita Nolan, Zara Doyle and Michael O'Flanagan. We're discussing autism and how society maybe can look at the challenges. Challenges, there you are, we've said it, of autism in society for some people. Anita, you know, people say, God, I never really knew much about autism. Now I'm learning all this and what Anita has to go through and, you know, what Zara has gone through. Or I want to do more now. So what are we to do?
Ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I always say, I think sometimes people are afraid. They're like, oh God, autism, I don't know anything about autism, so I'm just going to say nothing. I have the greatest respect for anyone that will come up to me and say, do you know what? I don't know anything about autism. I know you have an autistic child. What can I do to help you? Or what can I do to make this experience better for you? I have so much respect for someone to come up and just say, I don't know. Help me, educate me, explain to me, and I will be the first person to answer any question and give any support that I possibly can to, if that's a business, a group, or another parent. So it's ask questions and be open to listen and to learn and to accept, because that's how we promote autism acceptance, is by true education.
You were saying earlier on, you know, looking to the future, yeah, there's going to be some times ahead and you'd like things to be better. There's employment and the attitude of employers, and maybe some have a prejudice. Listen, I don't need the hassle. There could be, you know, give me somebody who's not autistic. I'll just, you know, I don't need, you know, to be faced with that.
Yeah, and that's just that's putting it back into a stereotypic box. Like, there's no two autistic people that are the same. Just like there's no person at all. Everyone is unique and everyone is perfectly imperfect as well, and that's what makes a beautiful society, and that goes with people with autism as well. And I believe everyone should have the equal chance. And yes, if you need to make a few little changes for support, maybe you might have an employee that'll come in and like that, they don't like loud noises, they don't have to wear the big ear defenders, we can actually get earplugs now, that could support them, because a lot of people that are on the spectrum are actually the best employees to have, because they have such strong special interests that if they go into a job that they really love, they are going to be the best employee that you have. But you just have to support them so that they can reach their full potential as well.
Yeah, you were saying you're fearful of the future. But look, even the present of searching for schools and the barriers that are up and the places that are not available.
Yeah, the school situation is a different kettle of fish altogether now. So trying to find a school place. So like I said, when you have an ASD unit, say, so that can only facilitate 6 children per class. And most schools might only have one classroom, or they might be able to offer 2 classrooms, but still, that's only 6 to 12 children. There could be 40 children applying for those places. And not only that, if you give 2 classrooms with 12 places in it, those 12 places cover junior infants right up to 6th class. So it's not that there's 6 junior infant places, 6 senior infants, it's 12 places or 6 places from junior infants to 6th class. So it's like a domino effect. So there's some schools that I had spoke to when I was looking for a place with Dunnicket, and when I was speaking to the principal, and they were like, we're so sorry, we don't have a place, he's on a wait list, we'll be in touch. And I said, when do you think a place will open up? And they said, probably in about 2 years. And I was like, 2 years, how can you tell me that? And she goes, well, our eldest is in 4th class, so he still has to do 5th and 6th before he leaves to free up a place for another
child. And there's going to be
competition
for that place.
And there's going to be competition for it. And it's a disgrace, because at the end of the day, every child has a constitutional right to an education. But yet children that, especially children on the spectrum, are just put us to decide, like, because it's like, I was even told, I remember when I was asking people, I was like, oh God, what if he doesn't get a place? And the reply I got off the NCSE was, don't worry, he will. And I'm like, that's not a reply. That's not helping
that
my anxiety.
Give you time or days, right?
I need to know, like, where, like, will he have a school place in September? And they were like, well, look, there's always home tuition. And I was like, sorry? I was like, no. He's getting dropped to a school gate.
Yeah.
What school gate? I don't know. But that is, you have to find him a school place. Like, and right now, I know personally, even just the members of Little Warriors, there is at present 8 children that still haven't got a school place. Mm. And have gotten an awful lot of no letters. And I don't know if they're going to have a school place in September.
And what about that, Zara? The specialist education that Anita wants for her children versus people wanting to go to mainstream.
Okay, so I think the education system, I shouldn't probably be allowed to talk on this, but so the education system to me is really set up for the success of neurotypical people. Okay, so when we think about how we can set up the environment to be more accessible for autistic people, it's important to note that autistic people are, you know, intrinsically motivated for their specific topics. There's so many strengths that are attached to being an autistic person. We're creative, we're highly focused, we're just so passionate about our topics. We have a huge sense of social justice, and we really believe in the topics that kind of draw us in. So for instance, my son would be absolutely have an absolute graw for trains, and it started off with Thomas the Tank Engine when he was 2, and now it's freight trains and understanding engine sizes and the diameter of a track, and you know, and that has grown with him over time. So these things, you know, they stay with us. Our special interests, we really lean into them, and we should be building our education around that, because that's what we're motivated by. That's what we love, and that's what we're good at. So you can really recognise people's strengths through their comfort zone and expanding that comfort zone.
And is there a difference between the type of education that Anita's talking about, which is go to the schools at this stage of life to develop skills, and mainstream schools, which Adam was talking about, he took majors to get into mainstream schools, and development of that skill and interest to the betterment of the person, but also to society as a whole?
I think for autistic people, a lot of it is being taught to mask their, you know, natural tendencies as an autistic person. So to be able to sit in their place and listen and stay
Why
still.
Why is it not encouraged?
You probably shouldn't ask me, because I will give you the honest answer.
No, come on.
So I really think that, you know, if people are given the same chance, they will be allowed, you know, to grow in their environment. So if you're putting up all of these barriers, it's very difficult to flourish, you know, and to be able to show what you're good at and show your strengths and expand on those things. And if we communicate in a different way, for instance, if a person is non-speaking and they're autistic, you don't give them a pill for that. You talk to a speech therapist and find a different way of communicating. So use an augmented and alternative communication device, or communicate through drawing, which is what we did up until my son was, he started when he was 8, and now he's this incredible artist, and it's something he's flourished with over the years. At 18 now, that's his main form of communication, and he's using, you know, text messages. He's starting to use facial recognition for tapping on his phone, and all of those skills you need as an adult to actually survive, you know, in your day-to-day environment, to be able to go to the shop, to pay a bill, all of those things. And that's what we should be centering our education around.
Recognition as a positive for all this.
Exactly.
Rather than, it's not all fitting into this big, huge spectrum of achievement.
Yeah. And I can appreciate that's the ideal scenario when people start, but I think it starts with the attitude.
But let's use the resources of people. Michael?
Yeah, can I just come in on that very briefly? And I agree with Anita about the right to an education. It's the only socio-economic right referenced explicitly within the Constitution. And we've got legislation, we've got the Epson Act, which is non-commenced, or there's 18 sections of that which are non-commenced. Section 2 of that speaks about an inclusive education. We have the Education Act as well. Section 7 of that speaks about an inclusive education. So, you know, the laws are there, and Article 24 of the UNCRPD as well. But if I can speak on a personal moment for a second, when my brother was transitioning from primary school into secondary school, we had 10 rejection letters. And, you know, I know from speaking to my dad and my stepmom, Kieran, like each one of those letters coming in was, you know, a kind of a stab to the heart, almost, because your child, your sibling, your brother has been rejected by the educational system. We eventually got a school place in secondary school. His reports had an original recommendation.
Mainstream.
Well, his report, he's in an autism class in mainstream, but his report when he was transitioning had, you know, a recommendation for a special school place. There was various hens teeth. We weren't able to get one for him. So he was then, you know, we secured a school place in mainstream for him in an autism class in Mead, and their approach is totally inclusive, and he's thriving in that classroom. He is in the autism class, but he also has access to the mainstream. He's doing home economics and art, and he's there, he's present, and there's a great appreciation in of itself and on that for him to be able to learn, to be with his peers, the 13 and 14 or 15 year olds in the classroom as he transitions. And it's a school that does it very well. We know of the issues within the education system when it comes to accessing the school place, and you know, it's more than accessing the school place at the end of the day as well. It's important to ensure that the environment that the individual is in is supporting them to grow and to develop to be the best that they can be. And you know, looking at my brother now, Gavin, very proud of him, looking at him as he transitions, you know, from second year into third year, and seeing what that holds for him. But it can be done. You know, I would disagree with anyone to say it can't be done. It can be done. And as a family, we're living that experience. You know, we've seen him developing, and you know, he's happier. He's coming home happier and so on, because the teachers and the staff believe in him, and he believes in them. And that's really
right.
Important.
Right. Yeah. And I was just thinking what Ben said. When he was first diagnosed, it was a disorder, inverted commas, on all this. And from listening to what you're all saying, I mean, this seems to be equivalent to a medical condition, even though we heard disclaimer earlier on. But it's, I mean, how to describe it? It's sort of behavioural difference that can be so positive. You know, which way should we look at it?
Divergence rather than, like, we've moved away, I think. We've learned a lot over the past two decades, really around language and being accepting of what autism means. And we talk about neurodiversity. You know, the whole world is neurodiverse. A neurotypical person is the majority of society, and a neurodivergent person is the neurominority, if you like. So, you know, it's really just using that more inclusive and accessible way of promoting positive autistic experience, which we don't hear enough about. We hear about in the media, you know, what we might hear is the waiting list and the bad experiences and, you know, the advocacy piece. But there's a huge amount of joy as well that comes from being a parent to an autistic child, you know, and you experience those micro traumatic moments through their eyes, but also you experience that micro joy moment as well, so that they kind of counteract each other. And it's an absolute privilege to be able to parent an autistic child, and to recognize their joy in those moments as well. And I don't think that's sung enough, you know.
Yes, yeah. The little wins.
Yeah,
I always say that to our parents, we deal with so much, but no one will ever, for someone with a neurotypical child, will never understand those little wins and how big they are for us. Like they're huge. Like I remember one day, like, we were trying to get my younger son to use visuals, and I was like, he's just not getting it, he's just not getting it. And we were trying loads of different ways, and we were motivators. And one day he just came in with the picture of my mum's house, and I was like, oh, is he just handing this around? And he went, no, and he took me by my hand, brought me to the front door, and I was like, oh my God, he gets it. And I literally danced around my kitchen like, you swear I won the lotto. I was like, yes, he finally got it. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. No one else will fully understand. That was such a huge win to us. But to someone else looking in, I'm like, oh, you picked up a picture and handed it. And I'm like, yeah, but it's huge. Like, you'll never fully. And I always say that to parents, no matter how small that little win looks to others, it's huge to us. Grab it, hold on to it, keep it, because that's the pure joy of parenting a child on the spectrum. Like, it's wonderful. Like, and I agree with you, we don't talk about the positives enough. We're constantly focusing on the negatives. And I really think, and I think that's where social media is amazing as well. You can, there's so many more parents now getting the confidence to go on social media and sharing the positive stories about raising their children, not just the negatives. Like, I always say, no matter what negative thing happens, find a positive out. There's always a positive. Like, I always say, my son, he, like I said before, call him Forrest Gump, but he ran off one day. I knew where he was going. He's going to the slide, and his brother ran with him. He won the race with his brother, and I was like, yes, good boy. Well done. Well done, you won that. I didn't focus on, oh, he ran off. Do you know, I always try to find those little positives, and yeah.
Yeah, this is brilliant. Great to talk to you all. We continue our conversation with Anita Nolan, Zara Doyle and Michael O'Flanagan. In just a second, we're live on World Autism Day at the Beach House in Greystones.
WhatsApp or text East Coast FM now, 087-77-11-103. On East Coast FM.
With thanks to Codling Wind Park. Visit Codling Wind Park in Wicklow Library between 16th and 18th of April to find out how we're supporting local communities and generating a greener Ireland.
Yes, we're live from the Beach House in Greystones for World Autism Day today. We've been here all morning, and at the moment we're having a conversation with Anita Nolan, Zara Doyle and Michael O'Flanagan. We spoke to them earlier and they gave us their situation. Anita has two children with autism. Zara was a late diagnosed person with autism and has a child or children?
Well, I've an 18-year-old who's autistic, yes.
Very good. And Sarah's been giving us her, you know, experiences and knowledge this morning. And also Michael O'Flanagan, whose brother, Gavin, is autistic. We want to celebrate for our last piece of conversation about World Autism Day and being autistic. And Anita, I mean, if somebody's saying, oh my gosh, you know, there's a suspicion that my son or daughter or whatever is autistic, and what will I do? And there's all the challenges there, and I don't know how it's going to fare in life and things. What advice would you give to them?
First of all, I would let that parent know that they're not on their own, that it'll be okay, and that there is help and support out there. I do find a lot of parents, when they kind of suspect or have worries or concerns that a child might be on the spectrum, it's a very confusing time. So I fully think that when someone comes up to you and says, oh, I don't know, I think you need to tell them, well, I believe you for one thing, because I find parents have to fight for people to believe them that they think their child is autistic. It's always like, oh, they're a boy, or they're a bit young yet, and that's so hard for a parent. And then just contact local support groups or online, as I am. But definitely, if you have a small child, your public health nurse is your first point of call. Mm. They can help with...
Did you know anything about autism?
No, knew nothing. I had kind of a fair... It's not that I hadn't heard about it, but I didn't know really a lot about it. I was quite ignorant, to be quite honest with you. I was that parent of a child... was having a tantrum in Tesco, like, oh Jesus, look at that child. You know, I'll admit that openly, like, and boy was I ignorant, and I learned, and my boys not only educated me, but they taught me a whole new way of parenting, and I'll be forever grateful to my sons for that. And I just think it starts with a conversation, like I said before. And so any parent out there that has a concern or a worry or fear or whatever way you want to describe it about their child, it's okay. That's okay. And it's justifiable. No one knows a child better than their parent. Never mind a GP, never mind your public health nurse, your granny, aunt, uncle or cousin. A mother and father knows their child. Yeah. Trust your gut.
Were you scared when you first heard? Or
yeah, terrified.
Or were you, what, you had an explanation for something?
It was mixed emotions. It was very bizarre. When I first found out that Mason was autistic, it scared me, because I was like, what is this? I didn't know what it was, and I went down that Google hole that you should not go down.
Every disease in the
world
wide web.
Oh god. But then I got in contact with parents that obviously had children that were on the spectrum, and I asked them questions, and they knew, and they reassured me, and they were like, look, it's going to be okay, you're not on your own, it's okay, you know, it will be okay, and pointed me in the right direction of who to contact and what I could do and what I could try, and gave me that advice. So definitely reaching out to other parents and groups is a big must.
Yeah, and you are in help overdrive.
Oh yeah, spreading awareness big time, and acceptance. It's really pushing acceptance. I just think if someone that has autism, it's not a scary thing. Like, you shouldn't be ashamed of it. I think we need to take that stigma off it. You're just, you're neurodiverse. You're just
Do you apologise?
No, and you shouldn't. Why should you? everyone is perfectly imperfect. Why should
you say,
one?
You know, you're going around somewhere and something happens. Something say, this isn't sorry about this, but do you do that?
I did. Do you know what? I used to do that with my older boy because I thought I had to. Now with Donica, I go, jeez, it's mad, isn't he?
Brilliant.
And I just keep walking and people are like, oh, okay, okay. And I was thinking, he's such a character. I'm like, I don't have
to. But
do
you feel
excuses.
That you should be explaining?
No, not anymore. Okay. Unless I have to. If someone was rude or ignorant, actually, I know this is terrible. Like, and I normally don't get argumentative with anyone that comes up. I'm used to hearing ignorant comments and I just tend to ignore them because I've too much going in my life than having to educate those ignorant people on a daily. But there was one instance, I was in the playground and Donica was unfortunately having a meltdown. He got a little bit overloaded and Donica does, he self-harms quite a bit and he hits his head. So he was doing that one day and I picked him up and I said, look, we'll put you in the swing because the swinging sensation calms him down. But because he can't sit in a swing for his age group, I put him in the baby swing. But he was still kicking and trashing. And I remember this woman comes up to me and she was like, oh God, you'd want to stop that now, you're making a whip for your own back when he gets older. And I literally just looked and I went, sorry, he's actually autistic. And her reply to me was, oh really? Oh, he doesn't look autistic. And I remember standing there going, what? And then I was like, all right. And I said, well, sure, look, you don't look ignorant today, but sure, here we are. And okay. It was the first time ever, and I never, ever do that. But I was like, do you know what? I was like, no, yeah. I'm not. And that was the day I decided I'm not going to apologise for my child anymore. I'm not. He is who he is. And he's perfect.
Sarah, you've an experience all your life. You know what I mean? First of all, wondering, I'm sure. And then late diagnosis. And then, you know, child in the family. And, you know, what can you tell us? What can you tell to parents who are wondering of what their next step is? And
I think when I first heard or received the diagnosis for my son, I had heard of autism before, as in it was represented by Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, and I'm sure that was a lot of people's
first
experience.
That was my first one, yeah. I thought it was brilliant, you know.
I mean, yeah, but that's one story, you know, and I suppose it's that tarring everyone with the same brush, for want of a better explainer. You know, there's so many different, like, autism is something that affects everybody in different ways. In, you know, there are different ways of experiencing the world, different ways of communicating, and different ways of just managing and getting through your life, you know. So there's lots of challenges, but there are also lots of strengths as well. But when we first received the diagnosis, I also did the whole going down the Google rabbit hole and disappeared, I think, for at least 10 years probably, trying to study these things and trying to get a better understanding. But because I was autistic myself, I found the whole parent group situation very difficult, because I experienced something called hyperempathy, whereas I would take on other people's stress after a conversation with them. So I'd end up leaving the parent support group feeling even more stressed than I did going in. So I didn't find that relief within that kind of camaraderie with other parents. Now, a one-to-one conversation with another parent was perfect, but in a group situation, I found it quite stressful. So I ended up actually going and studying instead. So I did a full nosedive. I went and did an undergrad in special education, autism and children, all online. My son never slept, so I was up writing dissertations while he was watching, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine or YouTube clips on repeat or whatever it was at the time that took his interest. And then I set up a group similar to what you were saying as well, like, you know, and starting off with 5 children, moving on to 60 families coming, because they love the fact that it's a sensory accessible environment and our children are accepted for who they are and they're given the same chance to play like everybody else. But I think that's part of your acceptance as a parent. You have to go through that kind of roller coaster of emotions until you realise, actually, you know, all that really matters is the connection with your child and how you feel about them and the love that you have for your child.
Positive aspects that you were describing.
Exactly.
And yourself, Michael?
Yeah, I just to echo what my colleagues on the panel have said, and is that is to ensure that you get the information that you receive is accurate information. People can go down that kind of Google nose drive, as it's being called. So ensuring that they get access to reliable and informative information. I think linking them with other support groups is really key. Parents, as you said, need to know their children best. And, you know, we would also encourage when families ring our information line, you know, to link in with local support groups, because they'll offer you the best support and advice because they've been through the experience themselves. And that is key. Like if I look at my own brother Gavin, you know, my hope for him is that as he transitions through school and whatever his adult life might look like, whether he's in employment or not, or in adult, you know, adult supports and so on, is that he's happy and he's safe. And I think that's what we all expect, whether it's our children or our brothers and sisters, that the environment that they're in is supportive of them. And I think, you know, that would be my takeaway for parents, is also that you're not alone. There's lots of information out there. The resource that we have in As I Am, you know, can be key in understanding the diagnosis, and even as your child transitions through the different ages and so on. That, but yeah, accessing reliable information, linking in with support groups, having the conversation. I would always say never underestimate the power of a conversation, because you don't know where that will lead to and what support that might bring to the individual or to the family.
Well, listen, it's been very informative, and you know, it's quite humbling to listen to all you have to say. Just amazing. And it's World Autism Day, and I hope people who are listening take something away from it as well. So, fantastic. Come along and share your experiences and your wisdom and all this. Thank you very much indeed to Anita Nolan, who's a parent from Little Warriors in Arklow every Saturday morning, Zara Doyle and Michael O'Flanagan, who are from As I Am, with their own personal experiences. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Coming along on this World Autism Day here, we're celebrating at the Beach House in Greystone. Some music on the way. Fuck No Brain On, a broadcaster and musician, coming along with equally.
The Morning Show with Declan Meehan on East Coast FM.
With thanks to Codling Wind Park. Visit Codling Wind Park in Wicklow Library between 16th and 18th of April to find out how we're supporting local communities and generating a greener Ireland.
Yes, World Autism Day. We're in the Beach House in Greystones, and we are celebrating not only that day, but the forthcoming walk for As I Am. It's called the Same Chance Walk. It's on Sunday, April the 7th, which is this coming Sunday. And joining us now is Fick No Brain On from... Do we say Hot House Flowers anymore?
Say Hot House Flowers, yeah. We're still trucking along.
And RTE?
Oh, you can say that as well, you know, yeah.
And a great documentary that I was looking at there.
Did you see it?
I did.
It was fun,
magic,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
good. I'm delighted.
Well,
yeah.
great to see you again.
Nice to see you, Declan. Nice to see you.
But the context of you being here is that you are an ambassador, no less.
Well, that's a lovely... I'm very happy to be that as well, and as is my wife Sheena, who is at home working away on something at the moment. But we got involved with the Same Chance Walk last year when Adam invited us to come along, and it was just a great day out, you know. And the whole concept of Same Chance, which I'm sure Adam was probably in with you earlier speaking about, you know, affording everyone deserves the same chance. It's simple as that. And it's, you know, whether we're talking about kids having access to education or adults having access to engagement in the wider world, it's all part of the same thing. And of course there are so many stories. Like, everyone has a story, and these stories all need to be heard and valued, and they can lead us somewhere, you know. So the same chance walk it'll be fun.
That.
It's part of that, yeah.
So your experience of encountering autism.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, I have my 12-year-old boy is autistic, and you know, he was diagnosed when he was about 5, I guess, and he is now in 6th class in education.
Was that late, by the way?
Not particularly. You know, I think it depends on... It's the spectrum, as they call it, is so kind of wide, you know. So he would be what was termed high-functioning autism. In other words, you might notice straight away that he was autistic. So school, you know, I guess school and even in preschool were the times when we might have noticed challenges. And the school that he attended here in Graceland, he's now in sixth class at the in Graceland Educate Together, where they have an autism class, or they have a couple of them actually, and they can feed into mainstream and all of that. And I guess, you know, and it's for any school kid, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to specifically talk about our own experience, but for everyone, it's a roller coaster ride, because you can have. I've talked about stories earlier on. You can have chapters that are bright and smooth and work well, and you can have other chapters that are darker and rockier and a bit more of a roller coaster ride. And I think I'm fairly confident that I could be speaking for everyone in the kind of autistic school going community. So our lad has had great times, and he's had, you know, very challenging and difficult times. But I think the more awareness is raised, and organizations like As I Am can feed into schools and raise awareness not only to the school staff but also to other parents and to the entire school community about what it is to be autistic, yeah. And the many, many different things that it is to be autistic.
How does, say, next Sunday, you know, how does that help?
Well, it helps by, you know, neurodiversity, I think, is one of the most helpful terms that has been coined and kind of put in place, because it feels like a positive term. And the Same Chance Walk next Sunday is a gathering from the extended community where we're just getting out into nature and going for a walk. And it gives people a chance to swap stories and exchange experiences and be together. And it gives everyone a chance to have a good time.
And it's in Belmont, near Kilruddery. It's
exactly
part of it. You've brought along something to give us an old few notes on.
Would you like a few notes on something? Well, look, we could go traditional Irish and play a tune on the whistle, or we could have a little song.
Right, you choose. I'm just looking at me time.
You choose. What are we? How are we time-wise?
I think the little...
We'll go for a few notes.
Yeah.
All right.
Just in case they cut us all off.
Great, sure. Well, listen, we'll do a little quick tune, I'm sure, yeah. This is a tune called Banished Misfortune. Bring it with me on Sunday.
Yeah. And bring the guitar.
Yeah.
You're very good to come along to us this morning.
Well, it's been lovely talking to you, Declan.
As the ambassador of the Same Chance Walk in Belmont Estate. And, you know, it's going to be a good day if the weather is good.
If the weather holds up. And sure, even if it isn't, we can wrap up warm and get our layers on.
Well, thank you very much for dropping into us and playing us a bit of music, a bit of Kyole this morning, and you've finished off the programme in a nice way.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all our guests this morning. Thanks to our hosts, As I Am, and Adam Harris, and Katie and Jason is here, and everybody else is here. Claude is here. And thank you very much indeed for listening. We're back again tomorrow from all here at the Beach House in Greystones. Good morning.